welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
Derek.
Good day, sir.
Happy Halloween.
Oh, yes. Yes, this...
Happy Halloween-y.
This publishes on Halloween.
Right?
Wow.
End of October. Only 2 months left of the year. And it's 2025.
Yeah.
It's the last chance to do your witch paddle.
Yes.
Because after today, it's on with the Santa paddles.
Yes. Well, first Remembrance Day, then the Santa paddles.
Oh, no one waits for Remembrance Day anymore.
I know. I was in Canadian Tire and Home Depot. They all have their Christmas displays up.
Ridiculous. We used to get Remembrance Day off to go down to the cenotaphs and
I get Remembrance Day off.
Yeah, but do you do anything besides stay home?
No.
Stay home and watch it on the telly?
Me and a couple ex-military buddies, we go down to the... down to the Centaph in Bonneville or elsewhere. And
yeah, we used to do it all. We used to hold, if they didn't have it off, like when I was out west, they didn't have, one of the schools didn't get it off.
Mm-hmm.
But they would do a Remembrance Day ceremony in the school.
Yeah.
And me and some buddies were in air cadets at the time, so we had to go to school with our uniforms on that day.
Oh, okay.
So they did still mark it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, nowadays, if you get the day off, everybody just stays home.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go out
and yeah.
participate.
We don't get it. It's not a work holiday. It's if you register with work that you're ex-military and you're privileged to them, they give you the day off.
Right.
So not a lot of people are off that day, but some of us are.
Yeah, some of you are. So after that, the Santa paddles mm-hmm. will begin.
Yes.
So if you haven't done your witch paddle yet, you have until midnight. And then no more. You gotta wait till next year.
Yep.
Hot diggity. What you been up to this week?
Not too much.
Just working?
Just working. Yeah, it's always busy. There's a lot of churn and turmoil currently at work. So fun stuff. Fun stuff.
Yeah, I just been working, doing a lot of yard work and stuff. You know what I liked about the smoker? You can put a few racks of ribs on the smoker,
mm-hmm.
do all your yard work, and not have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Low and slow.
Yeah.
And then you get a lot of work done. Then you go and do a little bit with the smoker, then leave it again for another couple of hours.
Do you feel like you're not really doing any work by having a Traeger? Where it controls the temperature.
Who cares? I get to eat. Set it and forget it.
So, but you don't have the pleasure of maintaining a specific temperature and doing the work. The Traeger does all the work for you. The Traeger's doing smoking. You're not.
No. I got to operate the app on my phone that hooks up to my Traeger. I got to set the temperature. I got to set the timer. I got to set the time to move it down or up as per the recipe requires.
So much. I've
got to take out the meat at a certain point and it reaches a certain temperature internally.
Yeah,
and I got to wrap it and put sauce on or something like that. Wrap it, put it back on. Then I got to take it off, take it out of the wrapping, put it back on and slather it with barbecue sauce for another while till it gets nice and... Oh.
And that's how you made your spare ribs?
That's how I made my spare ribs. So there is this sugar-free barbecue sauce.
Okay.
And I wish I could remember the name of it. Tracy bought it.
Mm-hmm.
So I did one of the racks with that sauce just to give it a taste. And I wish I could remember the name of it because I tell you that the next time you are at the grocery store, if you see it,
mm-hmm.
keep on walking.
Don't use it.
Keep on walking. Nothing to see here, people. It's not as tasty.
I've tried Sweet Baby Ray's.
Sweet Baby Ray.
I've tried that in the past. It was really good. So it was a month or two ago. Anyways, it was on sale. It was a really good price. So I bought like 10 bottles of it.
Oh!
I got 10 bottles of Sweet Baby Ray's on a shelf in my basement.
And I make one chicken at a time.
You go through a lot.
Oh, yeah.
When you use it, it's like, oh, there's that bottle.
Yeah. Same with the dry rub.
Hmm.
When you got to coat like a brisket with dry rub.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good Lord. Oh, so good. I'm getting hungry now. Yeah. No, just doing a whole lot of work around the house and yard work right now. We got our neighbor's tree. I'm not sure if I mentioned this before, but it's tall, but it starts growing. Like, it grows really fast.
Yeah.
The thing's probably like 30, 40 feet high.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's a big tree. But the branches branch out towards our house. And from spring to fall, it grows so much that when the wind blows, it's hitting our eaves troughs.
Oh, okay.
So I cut it back every year, and this year I just said, you know what? This is getting lopped. Even talking to him, I said, like, this is... And he goes, his wife's the only one that wants the tree. He says, I wish it would just fall down. He said, if you need to trim this back, you just trim it back as far as you need to, like even right back here to the roots.
Yeah.
So yeah, we cut a massive couple sections off of that tree. Wow. We got sunlight now. I went quite the ways back.
Yeah.
Probably Excellent. 20 feet back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's at the height now that if that thing fell, it would be taking out eaves trough, roof, garage, windows.
Yeah.
That sort of deal. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just getting ahead of the game.
Yeah.
And then I sat down and ate a bunch of ribs.
So by trimming just your side of the tree, that tree is going to be heavy on his side of the tree. And if it falls over, chances are it's going to fall on his house.
No, it still leans more towards ours.
Okay.
But if it falls, the way it would fall would be straight across our lawn.
Okay.
So now that I've cut those branches back, nothing's going to hit our house.
Yeah.
It'll fall straight. It'll take out the fence on one side of our yard. And like I think this thing's huge. I wouldn't be surprised if it hits
the back fence.
The fence on the other side of our yard. And you've seen how wide our yard
is. Yeah, it's pretty big.
So, but that I don't care. I mean, I can replace a fence.
Yeah.
You know, houses in the middle of winter, if there's a bad snowstorm, yeah, that tends to be a bit harder to adjust to.
Yes.
Whereas if it breaks my fence and is laying across my lawn, it's just a hidey hole for the rabbits till spring.
Yes, exactly.
I ain't doing that in the winter.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, witch paddle, if you didn't do it today, and Santa paddle.
Yep.
Coming up.
You're done.
You're doing it like dinner. We've doing a bunch of Googling stuff this week. And you've seen all those videos on TV or on the social media, people are saving animals.
Saving a dog here, a cat there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bobcats and wolves and somebody gets their foot stuck in a trap. And
I saw a video of somebody saving a moose.
Digging him out?
They were on skidoos. They saw a moose head poke out of the holes under trees.
Yeah.
So this moose looked like a female moose, was trapped in this hole underneath the tree. And so they dug him out and the moose trotted off.
Yeah.
Didn't even say thank you.
Well, it stopped for a minute looking at them because they went two different ways, right?
I'm sure the moose was trying to assess the threat.
Now, see, there was a part where her head was pretty close to dude with the shovel.
Yes.
I would have reached in and scritched it on the nose.
Squeeze, squeeze,
squeeze. Hey, buddy! A little couple of scratches on the nose so he knows we're friendly.
And then she's enraged. I think more people get injured by moose every year than by bears.
What was his famous last words?
He's so fluffy!
Trampled by a moose. If somebody's getting charged by a moose, why don't they just jump in the air? The moose hits as you wrap your arms around its neck, and it takes you with them.
Yeah, just ride.
Sling around the top when he's not looking, jump off. Grab a tree branch. I mean, I don't know if it's work, but hey, I am going to try it. If I'm being charged by a moose and I've got nowhere to go,
yeah,
I try it. So there's this video out. They says, you know, usually these videos show people trying to save animals, sometimes even risking the safety to go the extra mile.
Yeah.
San Diego dog was seen, floating in the river amongst a whole bunch of debris. Condition was hard to make out, especially since he had caught something on his head. Big jug. Big plastic jug thing. He was too far out to grab, so in order to reach him, rescuers had to paddle out. I knew that time was of the essence since the container disoriented the animal and prevented him from breathing properly. Rescuers got help from lifeguards and headed out. They paddled on a small inflatable raft towards the dog. Weather wasn't cooperating because there was a storm. They approached the dog, but everything was not as it seemed. There was something different about this dog. When the rescuers returned to the shore with the animal, pulled him out of the raft, they soon had in shock at who they actually saved. They bring the animal to the shore, wrap him in a blanket, and carry him over to their truck so they can remove the container from the body. Once he's safe inside the vehicle, they discover the truth. The creature's not a dog at all.
It was an alien, a chupacabra.
The rescue struggled to pry the container off, but it wouldn't budge, so they went over to the San Diego Humane Society for further assistance. The Humane Society staff began to remove the container. They could see what was hiding beneath. The dog turned out to be a wild coyote. Are coyotes not dogs?
They are.
See, that's why the
species of dog, yeah. But it's a wild dog.
It's a wild dog. It was a coyote. The poor thing had cactus spines stuck in its fur, wounds covering his body. He lay there, allowing the text to help. Soon the coyote was stable enough to be transported to a wildlife center where he is continuing his healing journey. And when he's ready, he will be released back into the wild.
Cool.
Could you imagine one of these guys thinking, okay, I'm getting a free dog? And then all of a sudden you find, ooh, that's a wacky coyote.
Yeah.
So... Using your paddle craft to save wild animals now. There's just no end to the things you could do with a boat. It's Halloween, like I say. Halloween. Ghosts and goblins and trick-or-treaters.
It's that time of year.
Five most haunted lakes and rivers in the U.S. United States is home to several haunted bodies of water. Now, I know, have you ever heard of Ghost Road up by Port Perry?
No.
So, it's this. I found out about this when I was in high school there. And it has, I guess, transformed as time went on. There's this road, and you go there and you can park next to the farmer's field. And you will see this light coming across the field. And then just before it gets to you, disappears. Originally, it was some farmer's son coming across, and something happened. He fell and died on his horse, and the light was a lantern. Then later, it became, some kid on his motorbike coming across.
It adjusts for time.
We were up there a few times, never saw it. whatever. But people say, no, I actually saw it. I was going to call BS, but
yeah.
We saw something. Don't know what it was.
Sometimes there's these natural phenomenons where it kind of fools the mind. I remember I can't remember where it is in Ontario, but you drive down a road towards this dock with a mill or something on it. It's a giant building. And as you drive towards the building appears to get moved further and further and further and further away from you until you get close enough to pass it and suddenly it's just there. But you know, I've seen videos of it. It's like it looks like that building is getting further and smaller away as they approach it.
Weird.
It is weird. I wish I could remember what it was.
Well, maybe Ghost Row is just a giant firefly. anyway, it's October, season of fright. If you're hoping to get one last paddle in before winter arrives, grab your canoe, a trusted buddy. I don't know why they say it's a trusted buddy. And head out to one of these haunted lakes or rivers to celebrate Halloween in style. So there's five of them here. Lake Tahoe, California, and Nevada. I never heard any haunted stories about that. Known for its beautiful bright blue waters, Lake Tahoe is a popular adventure destination, seeing roughly 15 million visitors each year. However, don't be fooled by its beauty. Lake Tahoe has an unsettling history with several haunting legends. One of those legends, one of the most well-known, is of the Lady in White. It's always a Lady in White.
Mm-hmm. Or a Lady in Red.
Isn't that Christa Berg?
Something like that.
Something like that. According to Boat Tahoe, in the late 1800s, a woman was planning to marry the love of her life when things took a turn. The groom failed to attend the wedding, leaving the bride devastated. Unable to handle the heartbreak, the young woman took her life while wearing her wedding dress by jumping into the body of water. To this day, visitors report seeing the woman in her wedding dress as she roams the shore of Lake Tahoe. Mm. Dun, dun, dun. Ooh, spooky.
what's the next one? It's White Rock Lake in Texas. In Dallas, White Rock Lake is an unsuspecting body of water with an eerie story behind it. It is believed that 1943 was the first time a witness admitted seeing the Lady of the Lake. While the history behind this entity remains a mystery, many visitors have reported seeing a woman in a white dress drenched in water. The Travel wrote a piece on this woman and explained that she often asks for help after supposedly overturning her boat. She provides an address to Good Samaritans who drive to the given address just before she vanishes. As the story goes, the gentleman answers the door and explains that she, the woman, is his daughter who lost her life after drowning during a boating trip on White Rock Lake. That's creepy.
That's creepy.
That's White Rock Lake in Texas.
Dallas, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Spirit Lake, Idaho. According to City of Spirit Lake, this lake is one of two lakes in the world with a sealed bottom.
This is neat. I've heard of these lakes before. There's a cave dive you can do in Mexico where there's a mix of waters,
mm-hmm.
and there's a heavier saline water level and then a different freshwater level, and they don't mix.
Really?
Yeah, so they call them sealed bottom lakes.
Bottom waters are sealed and do not mix with the surface waters. It is believed that Spirit Lake's sealed bottom is haunted by lingering spirits. As the legend goes, the chief of the Kootenai tribe had a daughter named Fearless Running Water, who fell in love with a young, brave Shining Eagle. The devoted pair wanted to get married, but Yellow Serpent, a chief from a neighboring tribe, had his eyes set on the young woman. The chief made threats in hopes of having Fearless Running Water to himself. Couple refused to give in and ran off a cliff, now known as Suicide Cliff. Shining Eagle and his beloved partner bound themselves together and jumped into the water. The two were never seen again. Visitors at Spirit Lake can recall hearing the mournful cries coming from the lake.
Hmm.
That one could be explained away.
The next one is Hoover Dam. So the dam itself is apparently haunted. Hoover Dam is a concrete dam in Black Canyon on the Colorado River with a tragic story. During the Great Depression, between 1931 and 1936, Hoover Dam was under construction. In the process, 112 people lost their lives due to several factors, including falling, drowning, equipment accidents. On top of these fatalities, Hoover Dam has seen several suicides over the years. With the amount of tragedies that have occurred there, it is no surprise that sorrow fills the air. Listen closely, and you may hear the sounds of crying spirits and footsteps wandering around the area.
I'm thinking this is before the health and safety committees.
Yes.
And the last one, which is actually on this side of the country, Big Moose Lake, New York. The Adirondacks in New York State are home to plenty of tales and trails. Big Moose Lake holds one of the most horrific Adirondack stories, the murder of Grace Brown.
Oh, I actually have a name this time.
1905, Brown was working as a seamstress in the city of Cortland. After meeting a man named Chester Gillette, the pair hit it off and started a family together. However, Gillette was unwilling to marry Brown, so he moved back home with her family. She moved back home with her family. Brown did not give up on their love, and later Gillette invited her on a vacation to Big Moose Lake. Not too long after their arrival, they went for a boat ride that, unbeknownst to her, she would not return from. After being reported missing, a search effort went underway, eventually finding the overturned boat with Brown's deceased body submerged in the water. She had notable gashes on her face and around her head. Gillette was arrested and found guilty of murder in the first degree, resulting in his electric chair execution in 1908. From then on, there have been accounts of Grace Brown roaming on the shores surrounding Big Moose Lake.
Mm.
Dun, dun, dun. It's always women.
Yes.
That I haunt. Know. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's your Halloween-y stuff for you right there. All this. That'd be cool, though, just to... Like, you wouldn't mind meeting a ghost if they weren't, like, you see in the horror
if
movies.
If they weren't trying to kill you or something, right?
Hey, ghosty, ghosty Casper. How you doing, buddy? Why don't you come on over here? We'll go out for a boat ride and have a little... do some fishing. You can look under the water. Tell me where all the fish are.
Exactly, yeah. You can be my fish finder.
Yeah, that'd be neat to have a...
I have a ghost friend. He's my fish finder.
Yeah. Could you imagine having a ghost friend? That'd be awesome. That'd be the fun you could have at parties. The cheating you could do at cards.
I know. I know.
It'd be awesome. You sent me an article from Paddling Magazine written by Scott McGregor, who's the founder of Rapid Media. The real problem with paddle sports. This is quite the interesting article.
Yes, and it I thought about this a lot today. I read it a couple times now. It's I hadn't really. It's funny when somebody puts a pen to paper or describes something to you. It's like I never thought of it from that perspective, that aspect of it.
So Scott met Shannon Litzenberger while flying home from the world's largest consumer paddle sports show. Litzenberger is a freelance strategist, policy thinker, and leadership developer. She says, if our collective task is to imagine and co-create a better world for our future generations, what role does culture play in this project? She asked Scott, and he says, a shrugged, I hadn't thought about culture of the paddle sports business in a long time. The culture we abide by today, including the stories we live by, our normative behaviors, rituals, metaphors, and codes of belonging has produced the world we live in now, she adds. I wonder how Litzenberger's ideas on culture of collective thriving and leadership could work in our world. If Litzenberger attended the Paddle Sports Trade Coalition collab, what leadership capabilities would she help us develop to navigate the many intersecting crises we face today? Now, he's one of the, I guess, he was running a panel at the Paddle Sports Trade Coalition show there. And he says, I asked longtime paddling industry professionals what they thought our greatest successes and failures had been in the first 50 years. What should we keep doing? And what should we leave behind? That's a big question.
Mm. Yeah. For the health of the industry and the health of the activity for paddle sports, how do you preserve it going forward for future generations?
Because there's the sports and there's the industry, right? When you want to look at that, like there's the sport, everybody's out there having fun.
Yeah, exactly.
But then there's the business side of things.
Yeah. People got to put food on the table and people have to fill factories with workers to build the things that we use.
That they want to use to have their fun.
Yeah.
During the early years, the culture of the paddle sports industry wasn't too far from paddling culture. We were creating an industry, one new paddler at a time. Driving sales went like this. Meet people at the water with a trailer full of boats and gear samples.
There you go.
So you see a bunch of paddlers down there, and you got a new kayak, whitewater kayak.
Come try this out.
Hey, if you guys are scooting down the river, try this boat.
Mm-hmm.
Give me your thoughts on it. Take them down a river, across a lake, or along an ocean shoreline. These sensory capacities, attuning with the world around us, paying attention so we might discover beauty, awe, and inspiration, is what helps us all understand how to be in a relationship with ourselves and our world in a good way. Boat orders wrote themselves.
Exactly.
People saw the newest stuff and enjoyed getting out there, and everybody wanted a boat. For years, industry leaders gathered in Salt Lake City for outdoor retailer summer market. They didn't gather around a table per se, but there were enough carpet conversations among company owners to develop new ideas and plant seeds for the industry's future. We do that ourselves when we go to these shows.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going into a boardroom. You're just sitting there at booths and meeting up with people in the middle
talking
of the show
to
and talking about
everybody. Everybody's sharing their passion for the paddle sports industry.
Between sales meetings, fiercely independent-minded, highly competitive leaders of the top paddle sports brands and scrappy startup entrepreneurs discussed industry issues, yet the core culture remained virtually unchanged. Today, we have MBAs parachuting in to maximize returns for shareholders or plumb profits for a quick flip of the company. Companies who are experts in plastics manufacturing look at boats as new line items in revenue forecast spreadsheets. Meanwhile, the rest of the industry is forced to adapt or feel like they should adapt. A business culture that never had any business in the business of paddle sports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
just twisting it.
It really is. It's now it's all about making the boats and making the equipment. And we make plastics, so why don't we get into the
satisfying the shareholders?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's make more money. Selling more was a byproduct of sharing what we all loved with more people. Investors understood the connection to the water and believed what we believed. 20 years ago, nobody was hired into sales or marketing roles because they were expected to double revenue every 2 years. They were hired because they understood what paddle sports meant to customers. Soon as we foreground industry and background the experiences we are trying to bring to life, we screwed up, says Litzenberger.
Interesting perspective.
Very. I had to read that a few times as well.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as we foreground industry and background the experiences. So making the boats and selling the boats is first and foremost, as opposed to people getting out there and enjoying the boats.
Yeah, you ignore the culture and it's all about the business.
Yeah.
Sales, all about the business. And you're kind of forgetting the fact that you have a large group of people out there that are doing this because it's for pleasure, for enjoyment. Mm-hmm. It's not about, people don't get into paddle sports because they want to support a business. They get out there because they want to enjoy the outdoors.
But how many of the well-known paddlers have all the sponsorship stuff? That's become a lot more prevalent than it used to
people
be.
People do chase down sponsorships. Yeah. More
and
more.
We only use kayaks canoes or paddles or life jackets or, that brand. Hmm. And everything's pump the brand.
Yeah.
Right? I do know we aren't selling as many boats and boards as we were during the years of the pandemic.
Well, of course.
Participation during lockdown grew because people connected with themselves and the natural world. And they bought boats, boards, and all the fixings. They bought everything we could make. They didn't care about color. They didn't haggle on price.
Hmm.
Lissenberger asked me, how would the paddling industry organize itself differently if all that were needed were simple invitations to experience beauty, awe, and a connection to the elements. He says, Scott says, I don't know how exactly, but the who behind any paradigm shifting cultural change is easier to find. You'll find the answer stuck to the bumpers of station wagons and pickup trucks anywhere there's water. The world is run by those who show up.
Mm-hmm. Interesting article. It kind of got me thinking in a different aspect of it. And mm-hmm. and you can see this happening within the industry, and it becomes more of a bottom line thing. And you have to survive. Businesses have to survive. They do have to make money. But it became sort of it moved away from the culture of sport to a culture of business.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing that more and more where larger corporations, boat builders and so on, are buying up smaller ones and taking them apart at the seams and profiting making them look more appealing and then flipping them for a higher profit, higher price. So we've seen that a lot. And as different industries and sports come to the foreground, you see that, well, we saw it a lot with stand-up paddleboards. A lot of people, impassioned people, started out making stand-up paddleboards, and then obviously you still have to make money. And it's the ones who survived were the ones who either had a good culture shift towards them, or they're the ones that looked at the bottom line and it's like, well, we survived because we ate up all the smaller guys around us and we got their sales. And
mm-hmm. But so let me ask you this. When it comes to paddling culture, you got the people that are in the whitewater kayaking.
Yep.
Okay. Then you got the regular Joes who just go out and they buy, oh, that looks pretty cool to do. I'm going to go buy a stand-up paddleboard.
Mm-hmm.
And they go out once in a blue moon, or if the family's going to the beach, yes, they'll bring it, or if they're going to a cottage.
Yeah.
Do you consider that part of the culture, or that's just somebody that... Like, to me, you get these guys that are going,
yeah,
all the, you know, you get 4, 5, 10 guys going down to the river in their kayaks, and they're going around the world. That's the culture.
I think that is, yes.
But just, I get out on my paddleboard once every...
A couple times a summer.
Is that really the culture? Yeah, the
I don't think so. They're just a consumer, and it's not a passion for them. So I don't think that's part of the culture, but they're just part of the numbers for a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of these producers of sports gear and so on, they do count and rely on people like that, because they'll come out and they'll have to buy top to bottom. Like, you're talking entire rigged out setup and life jackets and gear. And
I think that's part of this business side that's targeting those mm-hmm. people.
Yes.
They're not really targeting the paddle sport
yeah.
culture.
Yeah.
They're just targeting anybody that will buy something from them.
Yeah, they're creating this romance that sells whatever gear they're mm-hmm. selling. And then people go, oh, I guess this wasn't for me. And so it's either on the secondary market or sits in an attic or...
Yeah.
Hmm.
Very interesting.
It is.
If you want a lot of really good articles, check out Paddling Magazine. You can see the online at paddlingmag.com. Scott's got a whole bunch of really good writers that come up with some good articles and whatnot to check that out. But yeah, that's really enjoyed this article. It really makes you think. The Edisto River Canoe and Kayak Trail Commission, ERCK, inviting locals and tourists to join them on the black waters of the Edisto River for the upcoming winter paddle series. Okie dokie.
Winter paddle series.
Mm-hmm. I saw a picture. There was no snow.
Where's the Edisto River?
In South Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah. South Carolina. And they will be hosting a monthly paddle trip from October through March for anyone looking to enjoy a unique recreational experience. So I'm thinking, well, I've done October to March.
Yeah.
With my dry suit,
yes,
through the snow, yeah, through the ice, through the uphill both ways. But I saw pictures and there was no snow. First trip was held October 19th, next to be held on November 9th. Canoes and kayaks are available for participants to rent. $35 per boat includes a shuttle, or you can bring your own. $10 per with a shuttle. Specific details regarding each trip can be found on erckTrail.org under the News and Events tab. Founded in 1989 as a Colleton County authority, the Edisto River Canoe and Kayak Trail Commission is dedicated to preserving and promoting this ecological gem. Commission offers scenic paddling experiences, maintains the river and its access points, and promotes awareness of the river's ecology. The Edisto River serves as a crucial habitat to many species who are threatened and endangered, such as wood stork. Have you ever seen a stork?
I've seen not in person.
Yeah, I've seen not in person.
Well, I've seen video and pictures of storks.
But you haven't ever seen one? I've never seen one in person either.
Mm-hmm.
Wood storks, red cockaded woodpeckers. I think that's how you say that one. Loggerhead turtles. ERCK promotes accessibility, conservation, and enjoyment of the Edisto River for future generations by introducing people to paddle sports and offering ongoing education through guided and interpretive paddling experiences. This has become a thing over the last decade, these paddling tours. Because you get nature hikes and stuff, right? Yeah. Where you, like, I mean, Algonquin was big on that. You meet here, where nature guide's going to take you on this trail and point out all the different things.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've been doing this now for a while. Where, okay, jump into a canoe and the guide's going to come along with him and he'll explain and point stuff out, yeah, and you can see it from a canoe seat,
yeah,
which is pretty cool because you can only walk so many. You can only walk so many trails,
yeah,
seeing the same mushrooms and trees.
Yeah.
The Edisto River, the longest free-flowing black water river in the U.S., is a natural treasure contained entirely within South Carolina's border. Flowing through ancient cypress forests and rich ecosystems, the river provides unique recreational opportunities for locals and visitors alike. So this is a term.
Yeah, longest free-flowing black water river.
I don't think I've ever heard it. I've never questioned it.
Yeah, yeah.
A black water river is a type of river with a slow-moving channel flowing through forested swamps or wetlands. Most major black water rivers are in the Amazon basin and the southern United States. Blackwater rivers are lower in nutrients than whitewater rivers and have ionic concentrations higher than rainwater.
Hmm.
I think if I've ever heard the term blackwater, I'm just thinking like really dark, tannicky looking
water. Yeah, and I've seen
water.
Water with high tannins in Algonquin Park, mm-hmm, where the tannins are leaching out of the pine trees and whatever.
And the soil. And
Yeah. The water turns black.
Yeah. Well, mind you, if you actually take a scoop of it, it's actually like a brown.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah. But so this here Blackwater River, this is something different than what I'm used to seeing.
Yeah. So the Edisto River is typically divided into three distinct geographic segments: the South Fork of the Edisto, the North Fork, and the Main Stem. North and South Forks meet near Branchville, South Carolina, to form the Main Stem. Main Stem continues its meandering path for 119 miles to the river mouth next to Edisto Beach. I never converted that to kilometers. 119 miles. Deal with it, people.
Yeah.
The Edisto River Canoe and Kayak Trail refers to a section of the upper Main Stem running 62 miles from Green Pond Church Landing to Lowndes Landing, with unspoiled scenery, easy access, and two state parks located along its banks. The ERCK Trail is a recreational gem for locals and visitors alike. Since 1989, the Edisto River Canoe and Kayak Commission has promoted responsible recreation on the ERCK Trail and has been its greatest steward and champion. The Edisto River's name originated from the word Edisto, a Native American term that means black, and refers to the dark color of the river created from decaying leaves and other plant materials. It was most likely named by the Edisto tribe, a member of the Kasabo family of tribes that lived along the lower Edisto River in present-day Edisto Island and surrounding Charleston and Colleton counties. The tribe gradually disappeared from disease and warfare in the early 1700s. However, the Coosaw Natchez tribe adopted Edisto Indian Organization as their new name in the 1960s in honor of their ancestral settlements along the river in present-day Dorchester and Colleton counties. Communities of their descendants live there today, and for more information regarding the larger Edisto River system beyond the ERCK Trail, you can visit the Friends of Edisto. F-R-E-D. Fred. Friends of the Edisto. Fred. So I was, like I said, I was just taking a peek through that sort of stuff, and that's a pretty looking, cool looking place to paddle.
Mm-hmm.
Fast facts, as they call them. There are approximately 310 unobstructed river miles from the headwaters in Edgefield and Saluda counties to the Atlantic Ocean.
Hmm.
Unobstructed. I love that word. It means no portages, no dams, no...
Yeah.
The Edisto is considered the longest free-flowing blackwater river in the United States and one of the longest worldwide. Edisto is the only major river in South Carolina that is entirely contained inside the state borders. The basin produces around one-fifth of South Carolina's timber and forest products and around one-third of crops and livestock. Edisto supports several rare, nationally threatened and endangered species such as the red-cockaded woodpecker, southern bald eagle, wood stork, loggerhead turtle, and short-nosed sturgeon.
Ooh.
I gotta say, there's two of those I've never heard of. I've heard of a sturgeon, but not a short-nosed sturgeon. And I've never heard of a red-cockaded woodpecker.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe these are just official names or something.
Like, and a southern bald eagle?
Yeah.
As opposed to a regular bald
eagle?
Yeah,
what's the difference there?
Maybe when he screams, his call has got an accent. He's got the southern drawl. I don't know. A total of 87 freshwater species and 120 saltwater species of fish have been identified in the Edisto and is most known by anglers for its largemouth bass, striped bass, red-breast sunfish, and black crappie.
Hmm.
There are around 12,000 acres of rice field impoundments found in the tidal areas of the river system.
So wild rice.
Mm-hmm. Rice. Which I would presume, impoundments, I would presume they're harvesting that.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I get the impression too. Just because of the access to the water.
How cool is that?
Very cool. Huh. Rice field impoundments.
Mm-hmm. 310 unobstructed river miles.
Yeah.
Hot diggity.
No portaging.
Do you mean, why do they not have a race?
Oh, they could, eh?
Right? 310-mile race from the headwaters in Edgefield to the Atlantic Ocean.
Hmm.
310 unobstructed. Go for it, folks.
There's got to be a race. We just haven't found it.
Maybe. We need to Google that. See if there is some sort of race down there that just... Because if you don't have to worry about...
Portaging
or anything, or dams or anything, then you just go for the gusto, in it to win it.
Yeah.
If you want more information on the Edisto River, ERCKTrail.com. www.ocaldera.org. They have a lot of information there and a lot of events, and they talk about the trail, they talk about the commission and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah.
Go there and check that out, ercktrail.org. Yeah, pretty cool. Going all the way across the world. Well, not quite all. We're going across the pond.
A quarter of the way, yeah.
A quarter of the way.
Yeah, across the pond.
Okay, I'm looking at the globe in my mind. If I'm here. Because that used to be the thing growing up. If you dig far enough, you'll find China.
Yes.
Because it's always on the other side of the world. It always made you wonder, what do they say over in China? Dig far enough down and you're going to...
hit North America?
I don't know. I would think so, but these are the things that keep me up at night. We talked about the Clean Water Sports Alliance before. You know, we have athletes and sports and paddle sports and that trying to get water clean and stuff like that, right?
And there's a lot more locations these days that are restoring, recovering, rejuvenating their waterways and so on, whether it be for
a lot
sports
of,
or drinking water or whatever.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of groups coming together and doing paddle cleanups of the rivers.
Yes.
The last few years.
I've seen that too.
So the Clean Water Sports Alliance, which Paddle UK is part of, is welcoming an independent commission looking into the largest review of the water sector since privatization. Commission will have an independent chair, Sir John Cunliffe, a former deputy governor of the Bank of England. He will be supported by advisors with a range of expertise on the water sector, including the environment. Sounds good.
Yep. The new sir.
Mm-hmm.
Sir John.
The new commission is part of the new government's commitment to clean up the water services industry and comes alongside the Water Special Measures Bill that is currently being debated in Parliament.
British Parliament.
Yes, British Parliament. The commission will report its findings back to the government next year. The commission will take expert evidence, and there will be opportunities for public engagement and public consultation. It will look at a range of issues that need to be addressed to fix the broken water sector. And that includes things like ensuring the water industry delivers best value for environment, public health, consumers, and the economy. Taking a strategic approach to planning how we manage water pollution and water supply at a catchment level. Ensure water regulators are effective in holding water companies to account.
That's a tough part to do. That's tough.
Yeah. Ensure water companies are financially and operationally resilient with secure infrastructure that is maintained over a long term. He'll take into account the interest of consumers, the public, and those who enjoy the water environment to help build public trust in the water companies. It's always great to have nice, clean water.
It is.
To drink.
Swimming.
And to
paddling.
Yeah.
Last thing you want to do is, you know, catch something because you tipped over in your canoe or kayak and...
Yeah. There's... many countries that have lakes that you just would not want to paddle in.
I remember when I was in college in Cornwall, Ontario, it was right there in front of the school is the St. Lawrence River. And so we would often get out with friends and be on the St. Lawrence River. And I remember one time the guy was out with a bunch of people, and it's just downstream, or it's just where they were just downstream of Domtar.
Ooh.
So they were water skiing, went in the water, and they said, "The water's burning my skin. The water's burning." He's like, "What's going on?" Pulled them out of the water, full body rash. It's like, this is the St. Lawrence River. This is a water supply. This is a drinking water supply. And Domtar is just dumping something. So yeah. And when you're in, so St. Lawrence River can take a bit more, but when you're in some enclosed areas, like we've heard about lakes in Algonquin where the algae blooms are happening because of phosphates and whatever we're doing to the lakes. So it's nice to be able to have a clean source of water that's tightly controlled and protected from industry and bad practices.
Well, how many times growing up did you ever hear the words, the beach is closed because of E. coli? Yeah.
And so that's geese.
Happens. That's every also, year now.
It's geese too, but it's geese as well as I think we're doing a lot better for effluent coming out of like water treatment plants for sewage and whatever. Mm-hmm. I think we're doing a lot better. Like in the Don Valley, they still do have breakovers when there's heavy rain and they can't contain all the water and suddenly have a poop stream going down into Toronto.
You got a poopy flow.
But yeah, it happens more and more often where you have beach closures due to E. coli levels. And
I don't ever remember hearing that.
No,
ever.
No, not back in the day.
Yeah.
They say a lot of people like to blame the geese. Oh, all the geese are pooping in the water. It's like,
they only count for a little bit of it, though.
I think it's people, too.
What, people pooping?
Well.
On the beach?
Could be. Apparently,
it was
happening up at Wasaga Beach.
That was the big news in Wasaga.
Yeah.
They'd be sitting there pooping in the beach and covering it.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Are you a cat?
Identify as. Yeah.
We need to take care of our planet better.
Yes. This commission is only looking at the water industry and its regulators, it's important the government does two things. Firstly, it takes forward the commission's recommendations. Secondly, it looks across government at all the other pressures on our water environment, from agricultural to road runoff to how can we ensure a revised planning system supports a healthy environment. Your water's clean. It only helps the environment around the water, right?
Yeah,
around the lakes, the rivers,
everything,
all that
benefits.
Sort of thing. Clean Water Sports Alliance represents 11 national governing bodies of sport to clean up water in the UK. Represents 450,000 members, athletes, and millions of participants and water users who are impacted each and every day by poor water quality and pollution. Alliance was shortlisted for the Grassroots Sports Organization of the Year as athletes and groups worked hard to enact and inspire change were celebrated. Ben Seal, head of Access and Environment at Paddle UK, says the Clean Water Sports Alliance has been calling for recreational users of water to have a voice in shaping the future of our water sector. They should have some sort of voice because they're the ones that are using it. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
We welcome the announcement today and look forward to the opportunity to give evidence to the commission on behalf of the millions of people who rely on water for their health and well-being. Importantly, while we welcome the steps taken by this government to clean up our waters, we mustn't lose sight of the fact that pollution in our waters is not just a result of the actions of the water industry, but many other factors, including agriculture. The same vigor must be applied in tackling these other sources of pollution that are damaging our river habitats and putting human health at risk. Now, we got a place, Rice Lake, just north of us.
Yes.
I was always told Rice Lake is notorious for its weeds.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can't drive a boat through there without having to...
Fouling the prop.
Yeah. Now, I've always been told that on, I think it was the West Shore...
It's worse.
There was a farm or something that was dumping fertilizer.
Oh, yeah.
Or the runoff. Runoff
in the field. So the,
and it was going into the lake fertilizing all these weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But that, like I say, I mean, you look at the amount of weeds in those areas and stuff. And yeah, I could see that being plausible.
Yeah.
Right? That is not a myth. But yeah, you know what? Like... Hey, if the Clean Water Sports Alliance can kick things up a notch and keep the pressure on and help clean water, then it's only catching, right?
Yeah.
It can spread. And
it's a constant battle. Like, every time you turn around, like, the Boundary Waters canoe area.
Yeah.
So they have fought back against mining in that area so many times, and it's like a back and forth battle where it's like, oh, we finally found protection. No, they want to cancel the protection. Okay, so the protections are canceled. Okay, some mines are going to open up. And next thing you know, there's somebody else in power, somebody else doing this, somebody else doing that. And so it's like a yo-yo. Like you see the boundary waters is it's back and forth, whether is it protected or is it not protected,
mm-hmm.
right?
Depends on the day of the week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there's got to be. No, I mean it's a two-edged coin. There's got to be a way to make a law that can't be repealed.
Yes,
for things like protection.
But there's also got to be a way to.
There's people are going to use that same sort of mm-hmm. tactic to something else that later on that should never have been made.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But now we can't repeal it yeah. because of.
Exactly. Exactly. But there's also got to be a way that we can pull these resources without damaging the environment around them. Mm-hmm. The technology has to improve. We have to get better at doing what we're doing. Like it was one of the things I was looking into recently, and I sent you a screenshot of it. But when you look far north in Ontario, like way up there, and I've always heard about the Ring of Fire. The Ring of Fire, yep. this, Ring of Fire, that. And it's the first time I saw it on a map.
We're not talking Johnny Cash.
No. No. So, but it was, I admit I was a bit ignorant on it. And until I started reading up on it, what was it, last week? So the Ring of Fire is just an area of high mineral deposits, valuable mineral deposits, that are very much out in the middle of nowhere in Ontario. And so they're looking at going into these areas and whole hog mining it. Mm-hmm. And but I was surprised at how large the area was. Like there's a lot of natural resources up there, but we can't give industry free rein. Like we can't stop them from mining that because we do need these resources, but we also have to.
You can't give them carte blanche up
yeah,
there.
Yeah. We have to do better at protecting. Yeah.
Because once you put in an airstrip.
Hmm. Yeah.
Game over.
Well, they're looking at building roads up there.
Well, yeah, that's.
And that's a big road. I looked at these long haul roads that they're looking at building, yeah. and it's way up there. Like they're like I thought
there's a lot of spots up there that won't handle a road. That's why everything goes in and out during the winter on the
yes.
ice roads.
Yeah. But they're right? looking at putting in year round roads. Way up into the Ring of Fire. And like, I thought it was like amazing that like there's a train that goes up to Moosonee Moose Factory and there's a winter road, an ice road that they use in the wintertime. You can drive a vehicle up there. And I thought, wow, that's wild. That's so far up. Then they finished the road up to Tuktoyaktuk. And so that road is a year round road. It's a rough road.
But there's lots of maintenance on it too.
There's lots of maintenance, right? And so now they're looking at these long-haul roads up into the Ring of Fire. These are extensive mm-hmm. roads that are connecting, you know, crossing and connecting lakes and rivers. And it's like, wow, that's a heck of a project all on its own.
Yeah. But if there's that much money to be made up there.
Exactly. And so
somebody's going to go in and get it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, it's.
Because when it comes to and some of these big projects, like you can't fly in this heavy equipment that is required for a mine. And to get heavy stuff in there, it has to be in the winter when things are frozen. But if they can get it up there year round, well, I guess it'll help some of these northern communities because there will be a year round road. That's the positive side of it. If you want to look at both sides of the coin.
But the pollution. And the destruction of the environment.
Yeah. As it is, like you hear about the Salish Wildlands and the giant logging roads that they're putting in and new bridges and providing access for logging. It's like, holy cow, it's industry itself. They follow environmental rules because they have to, not because they want to,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's expensive to follow all the rules for environmental protection. And so it's.
How many places do you see that they're digging up buried barrels of stuff?
Oh, I know. Yeah, from the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. Like Greenland is like that because they had a...
Leaching out.
And, yeah, they had all these bases that they built up during the Cold War. And now all these fuel barrels and equipment and trucks and bulldozers. They're all starting to come to the surface now that things, the environment's warming, right? So now they have to, billions of dollars are being spent to clean up these, and there's a lot of them in Canada along the Dew Line, Pine Tree Line and stuff.
Yep.
A lot of these areas, the military is spending millions and millions of dollars to fix up these Cold War era dumps of toxins, dioxins, fuel, and so on.
Well, the positive spin, if they're building these roads going up to the Ring of Fire,
mm-hmm.
is there's probably going to be places you can park.
to go canoeing.
To go canoe tripping. But yeah. once you start these roads and making these places accessible,
yeah.
it's a pretty slippery slope once you start.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Unfortunately.
Like, we're not going to be building too many houses up there, but it's the industry is going to move in, yeah. right?
I mean, look at northern Alberta and stuff with the oil and the mines and stuff
yeah.
up there.
Yeah.
Guys go in for a couple of weeks and then fly out sort of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Same deal.
Yeah.
As long as you get all the equipment in there.
Exactly.
Easy yeah. to get people in and out.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Good times.
Yeah, good times.
That's all I got this week. You got anything else?
Oh, remember I mentioned the optical illusion?
Yeah.
Incredible shrinking mill. It's in Port Colborne.
Oh, okay.
And I can't show anybody here listening, but I'm going to show you the video as soon as we're done recording.
Well, maybe we can
post
it up.
Yeah. yeah,
I tried posting something the other day and did this big post and put the link. Due to Canada's law on posting news items, you can't post this.
But where were you? Oh, you posted it on Facebook.
So, yeah, I was trying to put it on our social media.
Yeah.
I did this big post and I'm just like, what a waste of my time.
So you can take a screen grab of an address and people have to type it in, but you can't add a link.
What a pain in the arse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All righty. Well, if you got nothing else, and I've got nothing else, and we're just hoping that the weather is nice this weekend so we can go on a final canoe trip of the year. Hot diggity.
How exciting is that?
Yeah. So next week we might be talking about a canoe trip.
Canoe trip.
Maybe not. But maybe.
Depends if we survive or not.
Well, it depends if I can get rid of whatever it is I'm...
oh, yes.
I'm fighting now.
Your upper respiratory tract infection.
I get people say, do you have a cold?
You sound different.
You don't sound like yourself. Do I sound more manly than normal? Do I sound sexy? That's awesome. If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at battlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, Player FM, iHeartRadio, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can download or stream all our episodes there. If your podcast... if you don't know how to use podcasts, what's that word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Yeah, if you can't figure out how to do podcasts,
yeah.
your best bet just go to YouTube.
Yes.
And
you can play stream. It. We can be streamed from various podcasts as well as YouTube.
Yeah,
and
just listen to it there.
Yeah. Eventually, we're thinking about getting into maybe videoing us and dropping the video of us.
No, then we'll have to put our pants on.
We'll be. We'll be like Joe Rogan chatting and doing a podcast.
Right? If you enjoyed the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.